morning. We're going to be having a little bit of a panel. So like I mentioned earlier today, we had a marriage conference a few weeks back, I think 2 weeks ago now. And did anyone make it out to our marriage conference? A few hands, yeah, awesome. Good. We had a marriage conference. It was packed out, completely sold out. We redid this whole room into a banquet hall, and we did dinner on Friday and sessions on Saturday and all this stuff, and it was great. And one of our sessions, we had a Q&A with a panel, and it went so well. We loved it, and we thought, man, we should do that on a Sunday morning. It fits with our Me sermon series so perfectly, and so we decided that's what we're going to do. And so we took some of the questions from the marriage conference, and then we polled some people on social media. We put it out there on Facebook and Instagram. Hey, if you have any questions, let us know. We'd love to answer them. And that's what we're going to do. So we took all the questions, share with some, a little bit of the panel. Pastor Robin isn't here this morning. He's in Lockhart, but he wanted to be a part of the panel. He's very passionate about panels, apparently. So we try to figure out a way, and so he'll be joining us digitally every now and then. Him and Pastor Erica will pop up on the screen from time to time, and so get ready for them to jump in and answer some questions as well. But along with me, I'm going to be inviting up my wife, and actually my mom and dad are going to be coming up here as well, and so they're going to be, I'll introduce them when they get up here, but why don't you come on up, Pastor Mike and Irene Hollyfield, and then my wife Nikki. Yeah, y'all can grab one of those. Come on down. We're going to be jumping in to this panel. Have a seat. I brought this here just for you guys. So we're going to jump in. But like I said, their name is Mike, Pastor Mike and Pastor Irene. Most of you know them. If you don't, y'all have been at Promise Land, I guess, over 10 years now. But why don't you let us know? I'm going to have a seat here. How long have you been married? And any kids and grandkids? Why don't you? I know
grandkids, hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon, he says.
Hopefully soon.
Yikes.
I mean, hey, we're up here with him. We've been married actually 17 years. We got married in 2003. We just actually last Friday was our, not this past Friday, Valentine's Day was our anniversary. And so we met. Literally at Herbert's restaurant.
All right, yeah.
We really did. She walked in the door. I was supposed to be there on a blind date, but you didn't have Facebook or anything like that, so you couldn't stalk them and see what they looked like. But I was on a blind date to meet Irene. Didn't know who Irene was. And her cousin was going to hook us up. And anyway, we were waiting, and somebody was fashionably late. And this woman walks through the door, and I said, I don't know who that woman is, but I'm going to marry her one day. And she goes, what are you talking about? You always talk mess. I said, forget your cousin. I'm going to marry that woman. She goes, you don't even know if she's married or not. And I said, yeah, but I'm going to find out. And so her cousin turns around and sees this woman. She said, that's my cousin. I said, well, hook it up. That really did happen. Honestly, that's a true story. And we've been together ever since. We met December 1st, 99. We'll argue for the rest of our lives where we sat, but that's another. We're still seeking counseling on that one. So.
That's funny. And sitting next to me is my wife.
Yes.
Nikki Malakara.
Officially.
Officially. Yeah, I just did the name change. So it's like, I was like, okay, now you can't go anywhere. It's official. All right.
I was like, okay, there's no turning back. And he was like, now there's no turning back. And I was like, yeah, okay.
And we've been married 2 months.
2 months.
A little over 2 months.
Yeah.
And so we're super excited. We're gaining just as much information as you are.
Yes.
And so we're here today just to ask questions. We're moderating. We're not really. Maybe we'll jump in from time to time and answer a question about dating, but we still have a lot to learn about marriage. So.
Yes.
But let's jump right in. How about we do that? Okay. Is that cool? The first question that we had that came in is a question that we'll ask the Hollyfields here. What does it mean in the Bible when it says a man must leave his mother and cling to his wife? Does it mean that he needs to honor his wife more and his mother less?
I'm going to answer that one. I'm going to answer that one. I know I just talked a little bit, but I'm going to answer that one. Guys, what that means is that the umbilical cord is cut and you cling to your wife.
Exactly what it says.
The umbilical cord is cut, yeah.
Umbilical cord is cut and you cling to your wife. It doesn't mean you dishonor your parents. It doesn't mean that at all. What it means is that you create your own family. God made marriage, husband and wife, and you become one. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what that means.
Yeah, that's really good. I think that we have learned that too for us in our marriage, that being young, we have so much relied on our family mm-hmm. for so much. You know, like, I'm going to share this about you, but, you know, Nikki's grandpa did all her oil changes forever, like ever. Like, Nikki's like, what? You have to change oil? And I'm like, yes, babe, you have a brand new car. And if we want to keep it new, you got to change the oil, right? And it's like things like that, that it's like, oh, man, like, it's just us now. Like, mm-hmm. if she needs something, she calls me.
Yeah.
And if I need something, I go to YouTube. Like, that's it. Like, that's all we got, right? Like, it's each other. Yeah. And all my young husbands say it, amen, right? Like, that's it. And this is when we cling to each other. And so in the good times and in the bad, when we argue and and I have to recognize Nikki is 3.5 hours from any family at all. And I'm all she has. And so in moments that we argue, who's she going to turn to, right? Like, we have to cut this, like, tension down quick, because I now have a wife that is sitting there and who is feeling like I have nobody, and the only man that's supposed to love me is arguing with me, and now I feel alone, and I can only imagine what that feels like. And so it's each other, like,
yeah,
first.
You know that, like, this is my immediate family now. You mm-hmm. go from, like, your immediate family being your mom, your dad, your brothers, your sisters, to, like, this is my immediate family, and they come second.
Yeah.
And it becomes real.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Okay, so next question that came in, this is a good question too. I like this question. It says, how do you fight fair? How do you fight fair? And we don't mean like fist and,
like,
yeah, no, not like that. We're not talking about
no
cheat
face
codes.
Shots.
Yeah.
You see, I kind of stepped away on that one. Anyway,
I will answer
punch.
That one.
Okay.
I think fighting fair would have to be communication. Mm-hmm. That is super important. And validating in that communication.
Mm. Okay, and yeah. What do you mean by, like, validate? What does that mean to you?
You know, there's been situations where, of course, we had to learn this, but in communicating, we have to acknowledge what each other is saying and repeat, even in that heated moment that you are not so happy with each other and not liking each other. It's good to repeat what that person has said so that they know that they're being heard.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think that that's one thing that I think Emilio joked about it a few weeks ago when he preached, like, you're in the moment and you're arguing or you're disagreeing with each other. And instead of, like, listening to what that person's saying, you're, like, thinking about what you're going to say next.
Yeah.
And you have to, like you said, repeat back so that they know that they're listening. There's times where Emilio, like, says something, and I say something that was already on my mind. He's like, did you even listen to what I said?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I don't think I say it that nice, but yeah, that's
yeah.
Something
so
like
validating
that comes
what they're
out.
Saying
yeah,
is
yeah.
important.
Exactly.
Something
no,
like that.
Yeah, something like that. Something. I usually talk like in like New or like King James. So I'm like, oh, thou art my wife. Don't you thou love me? Right? Like, I'm very peaceful. I never raise my voice or get angry, but we don't need to talk about that. We're not here for me. Cool. The Steels want to jump in, and so we're going to jump into the Steels. They have a question they want to answer. So go ahead and turn your attention to the screens here.
Okay, so the next question is, how does one overcome pride?
I don't ever have to deal with this, so it's tough for me to answer that question. This was a great session at our marriage conference mm-hmm. this past few weeks. The best way to overcome pride in a relationship is to honor your spouse. Mm-hmm. Honor the person that you're in relationship with. So find ways to honor your spouse. Mm-hmm. And that is submission and servitude and humility.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're honoring someone else, it immediately puts you lower. And so pride and honor for someone else pride for yourself, honor for someone else can't go side by side. So mm-hmm. I think the best thing we can do is have conversations with people and say, what's the best way for me to honor you?
Yeah.
And have an honest conversation. We did that.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me, I asked you, and you told me, that I could be less crass. And I have to say, I mean, we have two sons, 13, 15. Mm-hmm. I'm a man. So some of the jokes are very boy-centered.
Lots of boy humor.
Very, very boy-centered humor around our house, and it's not very honoring. And so I've been doing so hard. I've been trying so hard to honor you by being less, you know, obnoxious, joking around, sarcasm.
Less
obnoxious. How is that going?
It's going. It's going well.
Yeah. Thank you. And then I said you could honor me by
language. Yes.
You know, I typically make my breakfast every day, which I enjoy. I enjoy cooking. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, when you actually, when you make it for me, it's like, wow. Especially Sunday mornings when I have to go to church early, I'm trying to iron clothes, I'm trying to get, you know, prepared.
Yeah.
When I walk in there and it's there, I'm like, she's honoring me. Mm-hmm. That's so awesome.
Yep.
That's so funny. Okay, so this is more, I think, for our single people or people that are dating, talking about marriage. So maybe you can answer this one.
Okay.
Okay, what goes into deciding who to marry?
Deciding
who to marry, yes.
Get an eight ball, get a good shake.
Fortune cookie.
Roll some dice, yeah, right. No, I think it's really important when deciding who to marry that you, and we kind of talked about this in the beginning of the sermon series, but that you figure out what's important to you, what you value, I think, whenever you can determine that, like, these things are things that, like, God has spoken to me about, these are things that I want to do, this is the direction that I'm going, that God's leading me. And these are things I'm passionate about, you know, family, maybe going to church. If going to church is important to you, then it needs to be important to the person that you're going to marry, right? Determining these things and knowing so that when you do come together, you complement each other. Mm-hmm. You push each other in the same direction. You challenge each other, you know, and you don't hold each other back or hinder each other. Yeah. I think sometimes we get so infatuated, so in love that we focus more on, like, reacting off our emotions. And then we end up engaged and married to someone who we then find out has vastly different callings or lifestyles or different things like that. And so I think it's important when determining that, like, that you know yourself, you become whole.
Yeah, yourself. And with that, it's just being, like, open and honest. Like, I agree with everything that you said. Like you said, emotions get involved, and then you're, like, 6 months down the line, a year down the line.
Right.
And you haven't been open about what God has spoken to you or where you're going in life. Mm-hmm. And y'all are, like, on two completely different paths and don't even know it.
Right.
I think those things are so important. So if you're single and not having sex before marriage is important to you, or going to church, like you said, is important to you, or saving money is important to you, and then you get with someone and realize, like, it's not as important to them. I think the main thing is, like, not settling. Mm. So you get in a relationship and it's not as important to them, and you slowly, like, kind of are doing what they're doing. You're saying, okay, maybe waiting to have sex is not as important to me. Or maybe not going to church every single Sunday is not as important. Mm. And you're in that relationship and you're a year down the line and you're like, what am I doing? Like, where these goals and these boundaries that you had are not there anymore. And so I think being upfront and honest before dating or when you first start dating about what is important to you, even though that means maybe y'all aren't supposed to be together.
Right.
I think that's why people avoid having the conversation, because it's hard.
Yeah.
And lastly, or maybe most important, is talking to God. Like, asking God. I think that there was so many times in my life that I was talking to someone or interested in someone, and I asked God, like, is this, give me peace if this is what you have for me. And there were so many times that God, I didn't have peace about it, or I knew that this wasn't what God had for me. And even though I liked the person, I had to step away from it and take myself out of that situation. Mm-hmm. And I knew one thing that I always told God is, like, God, you love me, you care for me, and you won't let my heart be broken. Mm-hmm. As long as I'm listening to you, as long as I'm talking to you, then you will direct me and you will help me with this. And so that was one thing. Yeah, talk to God.
Oh, wow. Wait, let me ask really quick, because the Hollyfield, they have mid-20s son, really young though, really young, good-looking son, who just got married. You have a daughter who's engaged. Then you have a son who's a freshman in college. And dating a lot, so let's just say that. And then you have a daughter who's a senior in high school. What is it like from a parent's point of view, I guess, like when it comes to your kids dating or bringing guys and girls home and different things like that, that like you feel for, that you could give wisdom, I guess, to younger, you know, kids that are dating or in relationships or, yeah, or considering marriage?
I'll answer. One thing, you know, I didn't grow up with parents. I didn't have parents in my life. I've been on my own since I was 15. So I didn't know how to be a father, really. I didn't have that positive role model in my life except my grandfather, who was married for multiple years. He'd have been married 70 years the year I moved here if they wouldn't have passed away 2 months prior. And so learning how to be a father, I learned the respect from him of you didn't come around and honestly be all over each other. There was a respect that you had for
just
the home.
Exactly what he said was, he would tell us all the time, all the younger ones, pray for your spouse. Mm-hmm.
Pray for the ones that you're going to, your spouse in advance. Mm-hmm. Wow. Because you don't have to start praying when you find or when you get married. You pray for them now, that their heart is on fire for God and that God is first in their life. Wow. So I want to encourage you to do that, that you not only be that example for them from this moment forward, but you also pray for your spouse. Pray for that in advance for those that are young, that are about to get married. Yeah. Continually pray for them that God would use them beyond their what they think is their abilities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a great habit to pick up before you're married that should lead into while you're married. Yeah, that's great. We have a question here. It's pretty good. I think it's perfect for you guys. It says, does she always have to be right?
You better say.
Yes. Yeah. She always has to be right. Give me a high five on that. Yeah, she paid me $100 to do that.
Yeah. Brownie points.
Guys, if you want your home to be happy, there's an old country song that says, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. You just remember that one. No, seriously. Yes. That's the answer.
There what you do you go. Think
I
about
thought
that?
You were going to say more. I was like, cut it. Just yes.
I'm going to cut that one.
I want to hear your answer.
We taught you well.
You well.
You did. Let's just move on.
Okay. Okay.
I'm just joking. I'm joking, kind of. Woo! All right. Next question. Of course you're always right, babe. Of course. I just like to challenge you sometimes. That's all.
A lot.
Oh, we're going to head back to the steals. Okay. Let's turn our attention to the screen. They got some more wisdom for us.
Is it better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission?
That's an easy one. No.
To there ask, is no way.
I'm not sure who asked that question.
Negative to the max of negative.
Yeah, asking for forgiveness instead of permission is a quick way to have a bad relationship.
Yes.
You should always be honoring one another by asking questions up front.
Yeah.
What do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? So, like, you know, you have friends you go out to eat with, mm-hmm. and I'm not invited, mm-hmm. and I go do stuff with friends or by myself or whatever, and you're not invited. Mm-hmm. So before we ever do that kind of stuff, they were like, hey, you know what, you know, I looked at the calendar, I don't see anything on it, but what do you think about this?
Yeah.
Whether it's an out-of-town trip or it's just going to hang out.
Well, I'll take that to another level. Ladies, do not go out and buy something very super expensive and then ask for forgiveness after the
fact. Ooh.
We have conversations about big purchases and honor your spouse in that by making joint decisions together.
Yeah.
That is good.
Yeah. That is so great.
So this next question is like real, I feel like is really important. I think that there's a lot of families in here. My family personally, I know y'all's family, had to navigate through this. So can blended families work? And if so, I mean, I think that it's shown that y'all did make it work, and how. How are y'all successful in making a blended family work?
I will answer that. It is hard. I mean, that's just the honest truth. It is hard, but it can work. And it takes a lot of work. Mm. And you have to keep in mind that the children are the priority. They didn't choose to be born. Mm-hmm. They didn't choose to to be, to the, they didn't choose the divorce.
Yeah.
And they didn't choose who you choose to be with.
Yeah.
The new spouse. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that that's what I always kept in mind, was Emilio was my priority, because I never wanted him to feel left out.
Yeah.
I would like to add to that as well. I mean, I know Emilio and I look a whole lot alike, you know,
I'm just a little taller.
He's in his 20s, but we've only been married for 17 years, and we've only been together 20 years. Yeah. But I want to say something to this, and this goes to the men, this goes to the women. There's too many times when you talk about step, like a stepdad or stepchildren, that it becomes a negative. And I want to say something, and I want everybody to understand this, please. I'm very passionate about this when I say this. The only step is that I stepped into his life. That's the only step. That's my son right there. That's my son. I raised him. Actually, when Irene and I chose to be together, and when we chose to really become one, I said, I need to talk to Emilio. And so Emilio and I sat outside the house, and I said, hey, Emilio, I want to let you know what your mom and I have decided, and I want to know what you think about it. Because I thought it was extremely important, because there could be a problem here, and we want to resolve it now. And he says, his exact words were, as long as you take care of my mom and I, I'm good.
Aww.
So he said.
How old was I?
Good kid.
You were six.
Six.
Six at the time. But then, there's another component here. There's his biological father.
Yeah.
And so I went to talk to Robert. And I said, Robert, I want to let you know what's going on. I didn't have to.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why I did this. Because too many times the kids become a pawn in this situation. They become a pawn where they're used back and forth, and they're used between the two. And there's no reason to have anger, because guess what? Robert was before I was. He was. He's his biological father. So Robert and I coached baseball together. People thought we were just the craziest thing. We coached Emilio in baseball, and we were apart with birthdays, everything. And yeah. I want to encourage you to
That's
do
awesome.
That because yeah. the kids are the ones that are affected yeah. by it. I didn't have to talk to Robert. I didn't have to talk to anybody else in his family, but we became one.
Yeah.
And that's a part of his life, and I chose to be a part of that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so important.
That's great.
I even thought whenever I heard and I met Emilio and heard that you and his dad had, like, coached him together, I thought that was, like amazing.
So cool. I was like, wow.
You did a great job.
Yeah. By no means was, like, our childhood and upbringing and stuff like perfect, mm-hmm. but one thing that is like my fondest memories and things that I'm very thankful for is those times where I saw like my stepdad and my dad come together, coach me, love me, be a part of my life, and it really helped me navigate through that as a young kid. It's such great wisdom and so much truth to just be mindful of the kid and the kids in the situation, because it helped me be at ease in my heart with Mike stepping into my life, coming into our house. My mom had been single her whole life. And to see my dad kind of like sit down, have conversations, coach, kind of validate Mike, it helped me in my heart say, like, I can trust him too. And yeah, it helped us grow so much. And so
yeah.
I think that's perfect. Those are great answers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next question?
Next question.
It says, do we really have to wait to be intimate? So I'm guessing that they're not married yet.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think they're married.
They're engaged and they need to yeah. wait to be intimate. Maybe we can all take a piece of this, but I think I'll start just by saying absolutely. Like, absolutely wait. If you're engaged and you're close, or you say, I have found the one that I'm going to marry, do I need to wait? Yes. The Bible never says when you find the person you're supposed to marry, then you can have sex. It says once you're married, then you can have sex. It's very clear that it is. And in the culture that we've lived in, we've taken this thing called sex, and we've made it about us, and we've made it about our pleasure and fulfilling mm-hmm. needs and feelings, and we've totally just twisted what sex was and the ceremony of it and the importance of it, and we have a very skewed view of what it is. And so because of that, we take that that view of it into our relationships, and we justify our wrongdoings. And God has never asked us to do something most of the way. When he gives you a command, or when he tells you to be obedient, it's 100%. Jesus was like walking his cross up to be crucified, and he got there, and he's like, I made it most of the way, so like, God, you can just figure out the sins of the earth on your own. It's like, nowhere in the Bible are you going to see that. It's all the way, honoring God 100%. And so if that's a value that you have, it's not something to be forfeited because you're close. It's something that you should take with you all the way through until you're married, and then you do it in an honoring way.
Yeah. And I think one way to help that, I think, is I got advice from my friend whenever me and Amelia was around. I think that goes back to just setting open and having those conversations, or even though maybe you're not there yet, is just knowing you set those boundaries and have those conversations like, hey, I don't do this. Mm-hmm. Because then you get in that moment and y'all are dating, and like I said, y'all are months down the road and y'all are together, and you cross those boundaries because they were never talked about. Y'all never set those boundaries. Y'all never set those lines of like, hey, I don't do this and I don't go that far. And you cross boundaries by not talking about them. And I think having those hard conversations. And if I think it's important to know, like, if you have crossed those boundaries, or you are crossing those boundaries or doing those things,
start now. Like, there's no...
That doesn't mean that you messed up or you went too far, but you can start now, and you can ask God to help you and forgive you. And God, I know it's maybe a weird conversation to have with God, but to ask God to give you that self-control, and he'll help you along the way, and he'll honor your relationship, and he'll honor you because you're honoring him.
Yeah.
Even though it's not the easiest, even though it's a struggle, he knows your heart, and he knows that you're trying, and he knows that that's something that's important to you, and he'll help you with that.
That's so true. So. What do y'all think? I mean, do y'all want to give any input into that, like, concept? I mean, as pastors and parents, and kind of throwing you on the spot here.
No, I absolutely agree, because, you know, we didn't live for the Lord all of our life. Mm-hmm. We didn't. I grew up in church, and as soon as I turned 18, I went a different route, literally. I did the exact opposite and did everything backwards, and our kids were born out of wedlock, and our younger kids were born out of wedlock, and so there was dysfunction in there. But when you truly have a relationship with God and you put him first, then every other relationship will line up. He does help you in times when you're hurting, or when you're struggling in life. Just because you become a Christian doesn't mean everything's perfect.
Yeah.
He helps you along the way, and he forgives you of those sins. He forgives you of those things that you've done in your past that didn't line up with him.
Yeah.
So I encourage you to put him first. And I mean, I couldn't say it any better than what you said.
Yeah. I think it's important that people know this is a God-given feeling and emotion. Yeah. God wants you to be intimate, okay? He's given it to us. In context of what the Bible says about it, and so I want to address the fact that we grow up telling people no to sex, no, and there's
like
someone by
bad,
the name of
bad.
Like Levi Lusco, who wrote a book, and it talks about that sex talk shouldn't be no, it should be not right now. We don't want people having a negative view on it or feeling like, you know, like once it's weird, enter into that comfort in it, because of that knowing the gift God given, but we have that emotion on.
We have to realize that
there's this strong desire in us that wants to be intimate, that wants to, you know, have that time together. And if we choose to put ourselves in situations where we are tempted or we have very little discipline, most of the time we're going to fail in some way.
Yeah.
In some way. So like Nikki was talking about, the boundaries is so important, because you can't convince yourself, God, just take this away from me, because one day you're going to need it. It's God, help me have the self-control.
Yes.
Then that's part of fruit of the Spirit. And I think it's important that we know that if you're in that situation, you have to be setting yourself up to succeed.
Yeah.
And so that whenever it does happen,
yeah, you can't say, give me self-control and then lay in bed together.
Right, yeah. And wisdom. Self-control and wisdom. Yes. Right, yes, there's both in it.
Exactly.
Awesome. Are the steals going to come back
up?
Yes, okay, let's turn
our
attention to the screen. Here we go. The steals are here.
All right, so the next question is, we felt pressured into actually really love that person. Is there hope for that marriage?
Yeah. That sounds like a hard question, but I think it's actually easier than it sounds, because mm-hmm. the answer is easier. Living it out may be more difficult, but for thousands of years, mm-hmm. people were in arranged marriages,
yeah.
and many of them didn't even know their spouse that well at all before they got married. There was no feeling. There was no real connection, and arranged marriages have a better life expectancy than American marriages.
Wow.
And it's crazy. And it just it just goes to show you that marriage is not about compatibility as much as it's about a covenant.
Right.
Marriage is all about saying, I will be with you from this day forward. But at the same time, God doesn't want you to live in prison. He doesn't want you to be suffering through marriage. Marriage is a blessing, and it's something that's awesome. So, yes, there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
No, God doesn't want you to stay in a place of misery, but He will provide a way to health and intimacy again, even though it may feel like there's no buzz, there's no energy in it, no excitement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
That's awesome. Good.
A deep question.
Yeah, that is.
That's a really deep question.
Okay, so I know we've talked a lot about communication and how that works and how important it is in a marriage. I don't know if y'all want to answer this one, but the next question is, how do you bring up conflict without your spouse getting defensive? I think that's an important, deep, question.
I think that was a huge struggle in our marriage. And this happened maybe, I don't know, a year and a half ago. We found ourselves, I think what had happened was the communication wasn't there. And because I would hold back mm-hmm. a whole bunch because I didn't want that argument to happen,
yeah.
and vice versa. And so it separated us. And it was not good in our marriage at all.
Yeah. So you weren't able to be open. Like, to avoid conflict and avoid an argument, you just said, I'm going to keep it to myself. I'm not going to say anything. He just made me mad, but he's not even going to know about it.
Right. Yeah. But then we got to a point to where it got really bad that, you know, we got to this place where it just exploded. Because I had held so much of how I really felt. And I think he did the same, because we didn't want to either hurt each other's feelings or just have that argument.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to be that way. And we just, of course, had to seek counseling for it and to learn to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Let's backtrack just a little bit. We have a little bit of time left, and if y'all are okay with it, I want to dive into this just a little bit, because I think it's really important. And so what you're saying is that for some time in your marriage, there was an inability to communicate
mm-hmm.
Because offense, or because mm-hmm. it would provoke one another and it would turn into an argument or
yeah.
some type of, you know, tension. How long would y'all say that like that was going on for?
Honestly, it was going on from the get-go. It really was. From the very first time we met, we never communicated simply because we didn't want to argue. But yet, the reality was we did argue. That was the problem, because we bottled it up so much that it was like, you know, some of y'all that older know what a pressure cooker is, and after a while, this pressure comes out. Well, who does it come out on? It comes out on the ones that are closest to you. And so on the outside, everything looked great. You know, we would smile, we'd be shaking hands, everybody's like, oh, your marriage is so good. But the reality was, it wasn't. You know, and the Bible says in 1 Timothy chapter 3, how can you lead God's church if you can't even manage your home? That's what it says. Verse 5 is what it says there. And, you know, we were campus pastors in Lockhart. We're trying to get this to go, but yet it was still a battle between us. Mm-hmm.
And it got to a point to where my family wasn't even home. I'm still trying to lead this church, still trying to, but yet never resolved any issue in our life. And so we went to Pastor Rob and said, I just can't do this. I can't do this. I need to work on my family. And he said, I agree with you. I agree you need to do this. You need to take a sabbatical.
So, sorry to interrupt you, but I just want everyone to catch up. So this was an ongoing thing, tension, arguments, miscommunication, offense. Mm-hmm. And it eventually built up to a moment, is what you were saying,
about
a year and a half ago. And this moment between you all that resulted in temporary separation.
Yeah.
That's what you mean by there was no one at your home.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Irene and the kids were somewhere else, and it was this breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
It was this breaking point that not everybody has to go through, but maybe for your story specifically, needed to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It did. It needed to happen. And then one thing was that we specifically wanted a Christian counselor because I wanted somebody that lived for the Lord. But the one thing that was amazing about this counselor, not only did he counsel us through this storm that we were going through, he also prayed for us. He prayed for us. So even though our story had some broken pieces and some really tough times and really went through some situations, there was absolute breakthrough because guess what? I said, God, where did I get to this? It started with me. It started with me. What did I do wrong? I didn't say, what did Irene do wrong? I didn't say, it's because of my kids. It was just a multitude of things, but it all came back to me. I had to get me right. Me, right? Somewhere along the line, I lost focus of God and who he was and my relationship with him.
And I feel like I need to say this because many times I believe that, yes, Satan does attack marriages.
Yeah.
But I had to come to realize that we had to take part in that too.
Yeah.
We couldn't give Satan all the credit. You know, this had been ongoing, and I knew that we had to realize and put our pride aside, you know, our stubbornness. All that led up to that point, and it wasn't. So I think that, in a sense, that these things and areas that we needed to work on were surfaced for a reason because we had been dealing with it for such a long, long time. That it was, you know, we'd get to church on Sunday, you know, shaking hands and hugging and smiles, pretending that, you know, our marriage was perfect.
Yeah.
And at one point or another in our life, we were going to have to deal with it. And I think that it surfaced so that we were able to deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I began to pray. I can tell you exactly where I was standing. I say, God, reveal to me what is not right with you. Reveal to me in my life what is not right with you. The anger that I've dealt with, the fact of not having parents, the fact of on and on and on. It just compounded, continually compounded. It to where he did reveal it, and there was healing and there was restoration. And I can tell you that yes, a blended family can work. Yes, counseling does work. It's not a bad thing. Go to counseling.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with set, like she just said, set your pride aside, seek counseling, seek a godly counselor to speak into your life, and pray for your spouse. Pray for your spouse. Pray for yourself that your heart lines up with him.
Yeah.
Wow.
So good.
That is very
such
good.
An amazing story of restoration and healing in a place that maybe some of you find yourself this morning in your relationship, maybe even just with yourself, that there's this like facade that you have to put on when you get to church or when you get to work to convince people that everything's okay and that you're good, your marriage is good. And at home, it's just like a completely different story. And there's little communication, little affection, very little patience. and so much just boils over. And we've come to these things where it's just like, oh, it's just who they are. It's just who they are. They're just going to get angry, but we'll sleep it off, and in the morning we'll pretend like nothing ever happened. And we learn to deal with it, and we make it a part of our life, and we try to live with it like it's normal. But the reality is it's not. And the reality is that God wants to help you through it. And though for the Hollyfields, the story was it came to this boiling point where I'm sure yelling was involved, and there was a lot of things that did happen. It doesn't have to be like that for everybody. And I'm thankful that they chose to come up here today and share their story with you all, because their testimony lets us know that we don't have to experience that. That we can choose today for it to start with me. And that we can face ourselves and go to God and say, God, reveal to us, reveal to me where I'm lacking, where I'm short. Where does this anger really come from? What from my childhood have I been suppressing? God, show me how I can be more patient with my husband or my wife. I know they continually do the wrong thing, say the wrong thing, or they don't remember all the things I tell them, but show me how I can be more patient or more loving. Show me. And that's the point of this sermon series, is that we would stop for a second and look at ourselves and say that if we want a better relationship, it starts with me. It starts with me. Can I pray for you before I dismiss y'all today? That if that's you, that you would just link your prayer with mine and that we would send them up to heaven together. Father, in the name of Jesus, we love you and we thank you for everything that you are doing in this moment. God, I thank you for the testimony that was brought forth by the Hollyfields, the wisdom that came from Nikki and Pastor Robin and Pastor Erica. God, I pray that it resonated. God, I pray for anyone in here this morning, if they can relate to the story or the situations that was shared, or they're feeling something, some uneasiness, or they know that there's something in their heart that they need to push, that they would have the strength and the boldness and the courage to face it. That they wouldn't just put it off and wait for that explosion. That they wouldn't just put it off and hope they never have to deal with it. That they wouldn't choose the easy route to close down, to not communicate, or to just be angry all the time. But that they would make a difficult decision to face real hurt in their heart, real trauma that they've experienced, real offense that they have towards their spouse or loved ones. God, and that you would give them the love and the support during that difficult moment. And that they would know and that they would be encouraged at the fact that when they get through it, that there's healing and wholeness.